Madam Speaker, firstly, let me apologize for my conspicuous absence yesterday. I am still nursing the flu, and after my contribution, Madam Speaker, for fear that it resurges, unfortunately, I may just stay away from the cool temperature a while. Madam Speaker, Henry Longfellow.
Honourable Member, you will be, or are you asking to be excused after you finish?
It all depends on how I feel, Madam Speaker. All I'm saying is I think my continued presence within the cold environment can just cause a resurgence of the coughing, which I'm trying desperately to curtail at this point. Madam Speaker, Henry Longfellow once said, "In this world, a man is either an anvil or a hammer." I have used those words, Madam Speaker, to preface my contribution here today, as today cannot, from my standpoint, be taken in isolation from my contribution made here approximately 1 year ago today. Henceforth, Madam Speaker, like an anvil, I have been on the receiving end. My contribution then, Madam Speaker, last year, lamented and denounced the unfortunate arrest of two colleagues of mine for what has been confirmed as incidents of utmost triviality. And although I took umbrage to such recalcitrance, Madam Speaker, I never for one moment thought that the old adage, "Le bab kamawabu puidife wuze sawu," would have found application in my personal circumstances. Madam Speaker, the compunction assails me inescapably, demanding a revisit of circumstances which ought to have greatly hindered my performance, both as a minister of government and a district representative. But as is biblically renowned, Madam Speaker, the Almighty God never gives his children burdens to carry unless he gives them strength to carry those burdens. Yes, Madam Speaker, an outline budget makes pronouncements on activity implementations. A minister of government, any official of government for that matter, needs all the help he can. His image, cooperation from his colleagues, and assistance from the people at large. It really does not help, Madam Speaker, when a minister has to operate with circumstances that deny comfort, or with a pendulum that lacks an iota of justification hanging over his or her head. Madam Speaker, please permit me, if you will, to recount one incident that ought to have dampened my spirits, that ought to have shortchanged me in my project implementation rate. Yes, Madam Speaker, it was just less than 2 months after my contribution in this Honorable House on the morning of June 18th last year, right in my parking lot in the center of Castries, next to SNS, was when I was approached by a professed Christian Controller of Customs, an Inspector Emmanuel Joseph, and a white Superintendent Armstrong.
Honorable Member, before you proceed any further, I would need to inquire from you whether the matters that you propose to speak about the subject. I am not aware.
Madam Speaker, it is not, but I will only venture to speak on facts that which have occurred. I will not venture into the merits or the merits of anything.
You are saying that according to your knowledge, the matter is not subjudice. That is what I am interested in.
Madam Speaker, you see, to even make a pronouncement of a matter being subjudice presupposes the existence of a matter. It presupposes the existence that there is a matter pending.
Is the matter before the court?
No.
Has it or has it not been decided?
There, to my knowledge, there is absolutely nothing before the court, Madam Speaker. I am just referring to a set of circumstances.
There is nothing before the court, according to...
No, Madam Speaker.
That is the question.
No, Madam Speaker, as I pulled up, they went in the opposite direction of a one-way street, came to my private car, and told me that I was under arrest for offenses relating to customs duties. They requested me, Madam Speaker, to accompany them to the Grozile Police Station. I told them I had absolutely no difficulty with that, and my driver, who was nearby, would drive me to the said police station. Mr. Armstrong indicated that he had no problem, providing that I permitted himself and the other officer to ride in my government-assigned vehicles. This I had absolutely no difficulties with. Lo and behold, Madam Speaker, before I left my private vehicle and boarded the government vehicle assigned to me, Inspector Emmanuel appeared to have wanted to pick a fight with me, as if the arrest was not justification enough. He yelled at me.
Remember, it is one thing to give the facts of an incident. It's another thing to...
It's an opinion.
Absolutely.
I am...
Officer is not here to defend himself, and it would not...
I oblige, Madam Speaker, let me speak from the standpoint of factual transpirations solely. I am indeed corrected. Madam Speaker, but he yelled at me, I am not traveling with you with a firearm on you, and made advances towards me. It was the Inspector Armstrong who asked him to retreat, and he so did, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, it hurt and it was disheartening for a white man to tell a black man to leave another black man alone. Indeed, I was instantaneously, Madam Speaker, treated as a common criminal. Madam Speaker, you will not believe, whilst I am in my vehicle with my driver, two officers in the back of the vehicle, I was accompanied, even before the incident, by a very esteemed friend of mine, Angel Brett. Madam Speaker, the Controller of Customs came into my vehicle, in fact, he launched his unappealing face into the vehicle.
Again,
my humble apologies. My humble apologies.
If you continue to do that, I will have to ask you to stop that particular...
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. Very, very well, Madam Speaker. I undertake, Madam Speaker, to abide by your advice. Yes, Madam Speaker, but he launched his face into the vehicle and yelled that he does not want her in my vehicle, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I have no reason or no knowledge as to why the presence of that individual infuriated the controller to that extent. Madam Speaker, I will be the first to say that no one should stand above the law. No one is above the rule of law. But as the old saying goes, it's not what is done, it's how it is done. Madam Speaker, I remained at the police station for about 6 hours and was asked to return in a month's time, the day after Carnival. Having reviewed my cameras that night, Madam Speaker, the cameras revealed that the customs officers were parked at my house, in close proximity to my house, from the early hours of the morning, and essentially they knew exactly where I lived. They could have confronted me there, Madam Speaker, but no. The public scandal was the desired effect. Madam Speaker, in my view, the officers and the controller ought to have known better and could have acted differently. When I got to my house that night, Madam Speaker, and I'm rounding up on that issue, there was a multitude of SSU officers armed with the latest versions of M16s, AK-47s, and other assault weapons. My house then, Madam Speaker, carried the semblance of a place of refuge for renowned international terrorists such as Osama bin Laden. What had I done? To date, Madam Speaker, no one can tell me. To date, Madam Speaker, I have not been told, but I am still deprived of the use of my vehicles, and have so been for the last 10 months. Madam Speaker, the magnitude of the damage, both regionally and internationally, to my reputation, financially and otherwise, cannot be fully enumerated here. But I will tell you this, Madam Speaker, those issues must be dealt with at a forum invoked specifically for that purpose. Madam Speaker, all of these actions were meant to blow the flame out of my candle. Yes, a concerted effort. But Madam Speaker, you know what? According to the Bible, Acts 4, when there was a conspiracy against Jesus, God permitted that conspiracy to work. When they wanted to murder him, God permitted that too to work. You see, God permits conspiracies to work for reasons known only to himself. For what he does not want done will never be done. So when mankind relish the outcome of their conspiracy, not only do they make fools of themselves, but they unwittingly make a mockery of the existence of the Almighty God. Madam Speaker, those hurdles have daunted me. I have behaved wisely in my quest to represent my people. As William James said, Madam Speaker, the art of being wise is knowing what to overlook. Madam Speaker, over the last year, I have approached my constituency holistically. I cannot do everything all at once, Madam Speaker, but if it is God's will, he will maintain in me the zeal and the quest necessary to persevere. Against the controversy, I had to forge on, Madam Speaker. As Martin Luther King once said, the true measure of a man is not where he stands in time of comfort, but is where he stands in times of trial, challenges, and controversies. In my constituency, Madam Speaker, over the last year, I have paved roads in Sans Souci and have redone a playground that exists in the Sans Souci Basin. In Cornwall, Madam Speaker, I remember for the general elections last year, the guys within that area were defecating in plastic bags and throwing the plastic bags in close proximity to the government buildings. Madam Speaker, that, I can tell you, is now something of the past. Not only did I refurbish the public facility, Madam Speaker, I added a facility for them to wash their clothes. And I also paved all the avenues that led to this facility so that nobody would end up walking in mud, Madam Speaker, for the use of that facility. Several other walls and footpaths, Madam Speaker, were constructed in the General Bernard's Hill area and in the Conway area. In the Mondinor area, Madam Speaker, quite a bit has been done. Footpaths have been repaired, steps have been built, and the shelter has been constructed, Madam Speaker, and right now, we are examining the possibility of acquiring some land up there for rationalization purposes. The place, Madam Speaker, is haphazardly settled and does not lend itself to the implementation of proper facilities for the residents therein. So we are embarking upon rationalization in that general area. In Georgeville, Madam Speaker, a bridge which stood there in a state of disrepair for a number of years has been repaired. A wall was built to facilitate quite a humongous drain that leads, I think, from the top of La Pensée, passes through Georgeville and ends up somewhere in George V Park. Madam Speaker, one side of that wall was recently built in January of this year. I am hoping in the not too distant future to redo the bottom and the other side of that wall to lend a certain degree of continuity, because the wall was properly done from Georgeville towards George V Park. I am not sure who did it, but I believe obviously the last administration had been instrumental in what went on. I am making an assumption here, Madam Speaker. I don't know if it was done by Putney, but if they did it, Madam Speaker, it was a good job. Madam Speaker, it may just have been done when Madam Speaker was the representative of Castries Central. And if this is the case, to you, credit is due. Accept it, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, all along the La Pensée Road, from the bottom, I am sure one could readily see the erection of a wall at the junction of the Chaussée and the La Pensée Road, right in the corner. A new wall was constructed there, Madam Speaker. My colleague, Mr. Lewis, seems to acknowledge that. A new wall was built, Madam Speaker, and the drains therefrom up to the top of La Pensée will be done in their entirety. Madam Speaker, in New Village, Upper New Village, one of the things that the persons lamented when I visited them in my quest to covet the Castries Central seat was that the road was in a state of disrepair. As soon as I assumed office, Madam Speaker, I caused that road to be paved in Upper New Village and the drains done. In Lower New Village, Madam Speaker, the drains need repairs. However, I thought the priority, Madam Speaker, was to build a facility for the youth of that area to recreate. And so, Madam Speaker, out of that idea, out of the quest to give them that facility, is the birth of a basketball court came through. And so, Madam Speaker, as I stand on my feet, I am pleased to announce that New Village was the residents rather of New Village have been the recipient of a brand new basketball court. And I do understand, Madam Speaker, in the not too distant future, a couple weeks from now, they have organized among themselves a football competition. They are doing it themselves, Madam Speaker. Caps is on board with them. And essentially, my point is that the basketball court is having the desired effect, having them to shoot balls rather than bullets. Madam Speaker, Mon Avit. I remember, Madam Speaker, going up to Mon Avit to campaign before the general elections. When I got there, I met a very level-headed young man, slim redskin, whom I know as a Mr. Foster. I don't know if he's related to my legal colleagues, but he is a Mr. Foster. And he made no bones about him being a supporter of the Labour Party. We had a very nice conversation, I must say. Very, very informed conversation. We didn't disrespect each other. And when I was leaving, Madam Speaker, he said to me, "Richard, when you win, I need you to repair the roads at Mon Avit." Madam Speaker, I obliged. And that road now, Madam Speaker, has been paved. It was left in a state of disrepair for a number of years, Madam Speaker. I felt their plight, and I repaired that road. Madam Speaker, and Rose Hill. Rose Hill, Madam Speaker, was another troubled area. Rose Hill, I believe, at the time when the Honorable Prime Minister, the current Honorable Prime Minister, represented Rose Hill, Madam Speaker, that is about 40 years ago. And I'm not being insolent, Madam Speaker, as regards AJ, I just... But when he represented Rose Hill, Madam Speaker, a community center was constructed. The community center, to my mind, was about between 20 and 25 years old. And it had not been the subject matter of any kind of refurbishment or repair. And so, Madam Speaker, given the state, the deplorable condition of the community center, pleas were made by the residents of that area, and I had absolutely no choice, Madam Speaker, but to oblige. What did I do, Madam Speaker? I changed the roof of that Rose Hill Community Center in its entirety. I built drains all along Rose Hill from the bottom, almost opposite courts, to the top, and I paved the entire room. The community center, all windows were changed, the roof was done, the kitchen was done, and now, Madam Speaker, my instructions are that the facility is being used in a very regulated manner by an organized community group, and essentially it is discharging its obligation being a center where persons should together socialize. So, Madam Speaker, I wish to, at this juncture, let the then district rep know that he did a good job, and I'm continuing where he left off. Madam Speaker, at Foligra, the roads at Foligra as well, Madam Speaker, were deplorable. And those roads did not lend themselves to proper vehicular traffic. What I did, Madam Speaker, they had the entire road, the entirety of the road, concreted, Madam Speaker. That road is concrete today, and the gutters were ridden and slabbed, so the place looks like Foligra is the capital of Castries. Oh yeah, Masha, I forgot. Sorry, I'm a member. McLean. Okay, all right. So, Madam Speaker, things are being done, Madam Speaker. In Upper Leslieland, a number of sidewalks were redone. Lastic Hill, Madam Speaker, I got a number of complaints that the convent girls were using this back road to walk from school to access town. Most motorists, Madam Speaker, never took cognizance of the presence on the road and would drive in a manner that showed total apathy to their presence. What we did, Madam Speaker, we put up some signs and speed bumps, and now the residents are breathing a sigh of relief. In Grass Street, Madam Speaker, we have the sad realities. Although Grass Street has been negatively stigmatized, Grass Street has a preschool right there in its center. There is a preschool right in the middle of Grass Street. Madam Speaker, that little thoroughfare again was being abused by motorists, Madam Speaker. No one essentially took cognizance of the existence of a preschool in such close proximity to the road. And so, Madam Speaker, I constructed a number of speed bumps in that area. Madam Speaker, I don't think it is necessary for me here to enumerate the amount of things that have been done within the Castries city. Those projects are quite blatant, and I'm sure the leader of the opposition will agree. Thank you very much. Within the city, Madam Speaker, there has been instantaneous transformation. Murals have been painted on the Derek Walcott Square. The provision market was painted and redone. The vendor's arcade, although that vendor's arcade, Madam Speaker, is in itself an avenue for problems which I believe I may need a battery of lawyers to defend. That vendor's arcade, Madam Speaker, it's a very, very sad situation. After Hurricane Dean, I proceeded to the arcade, had a meeting with the vendors, attempted desperately, Madam Speaker, to raise their hopes. Because, Madam Speaker, being quite blunt, this thing needs repair. I attempted, Madam Speaker, to explain to them that the possibility exists that we may secure funding, Madam Speaker, reconstruct a 3- or 4-story right there, have the top floors to subsidize the ground floor, so they would be paying minimal rents. And along with that, Madam Speaker, for them to secure a tenancy agreement, so that with a 20-year tenancy agreement, you can walk into a lending institution and actually borrow money against your lease, giving them an opportunity, Madam Speaker, to improve themselves. Lo and behold, Madam Speaker, the concept went down very, very well. Lo and behold, I had to leave the island, and when I returned, I was inundated with stories that went left, right, and center and were totally incongruous with what the dictates of our meeting were. I had not understood from where came those rumors. Because, Madam Speaker, the sad reality is, if our people have to do better, our people must understand that the status quo must be disturbed for a while. Many of us, Madam Speaker, we want to have our cake and eat it. We cannot refurbish our house in its entirety if we don't want to leave the house at all. It's either we stay there or we get out and we get done what ought to be done. But Madam Speaker, it was from a standpoint of empowering the vendors at the arcade that I decided to have a meeting along those lines. And Madam Speaker, I would tell you this, this building would work wonders because you would have the corporate citizenry subsidizing the space that the Malloys would have used downstairs in order to enhance themselves. But Madam Speaker, not all of us embrace change. Not all of us are willing to disturb the status quo for betterment down the road. And that is why we generally, as black people, Madam Speaker, we remain in a situation, we linger in a situation, we languish in a situation, being totally unprepared to make the sacrifices that would make us better in the end. Sometimes we see persons who enjoy betterment, who enjoy success, but the recipe of that, Madam Speaker, we need not know, we don't want to know, because we are totally uninterested. But Madam Speaker, nothing good comes easily. And I'm hoping, Madam Speaker, that at some point in the not too distant future, given the fact that the government has proposed an economic development plan for Castries, which incorporates the vendor's arcade, I am hoping that common sense would prevail. Because, Madam Speaker, the idea was being sold that the vendor's arcade was being tackled with due specificity. But that was wrong, Madam Speaker. It all formed part of a bigger package, Madam Speaker. It formed part of the package of the WAF development. And I am hoping, Madam Speaker, like I said, the vendors will realize that this is for the better. One undertaking I can give, Madam Speaker, that as long as I remain in government, I will not permit any administration to put out those people and when the facility is ready to deny them re-entry. I will ensure that they get back there. Our people need to be empowered, Madam Speaker. And again, it is because of that skepticism, Madam Speaker. It is because the people don't trust us fully, if I may say that, that they believe, Madam Speaker, that we will refurbish to their exclusion. Madam Speaker, we cannot proceed like that. Whatever we do, our people who have humble beginnings ought to get their slice of the national cake. So, Madam Speaker, in Castries, if I may continue along those lines, 10 comfort stations have been renovated. In Castries, we have reestablished the planters on Jeremy Street, Bridge Street, Monjuro Street, and alongside the market. I'm sure most of you have seen the bollards on Jeremy Street, which were essentially placed to minimize the destruction of slabs by vehicles that continuously straddle the sidewalks. A lot of drains in the city, Madam Speaker, have been slabbed to facilitate pedestrians. I'm sure the lighting in the city, one can see that there is an increase in the poly-lit areas. We have a canopy, Madam Speaker, that was established around the provision market to minimize the infusion of wind-blown rain. Madam Speaker, as we speak, a memorandum of understanding has been signed with the Castries City Council and the government of Japan's grassroots agency for the establishment of a fish vending facility which would annex the provision market. In fact, Madam Speaker, provision has been made in this budget for the balance of the $200,000 needed for its completion, since the Japanese gave some $230,000 and the project is estimated to cost some $430,000. Madam Speaker, the sword turning ceremony for the construction took place on April 16th this year, and your humble servant was in attendance. Madam Speaker, for the first time in the history of Castries City Constabulary, they were invited and participated in the national parade at the instance of the Independence Anniversary Parade. This is history in the making, Madam Speaker. They had never, ever attended. Madam Speaker, I'm still grappling because the city, in fact, should be manned by the city constabulary. I believe, Madam Speaker, that there are certain expertise within the force or who has just left the police force. I believe their services need to be embraced, Madam Speaker, to assist us in bringing up the Castries City Constabulary to power. Madam Speaker, the Castries City Council have been actively engaged in developing the guidelines for enactment of bylaws relating to littering, stray dogs, and vending. Those bylaws, Madam Speaker, might I inform you, are in the final stages of enactment. Madam Speaker, just across the road, Beetle Park, the repairs, Madam Speaker, are quite conspicuous. Beetle Park, Madam Speaker, was completely renovated, landscaping was done, and of course, electricity was supplied there too, Madam Speaker, making the park a fully lit area. At We are now undergoing, Madam Speaker, discussions with the Inland Revenue Department, as the legislation has already been passed for the Castries City Council to undertake the property tax regime. Madam Speaker, Castries City Council is burdened with the responsibility of shouldering a number of expenses not directly associated with anything but bite. All the lights you see in the city, Madam Speaker, used not only by the Castries City Council, but by all and sundry, by all St. Lucians who converge on Castries for one reason or the other. All that those lights, Madam Speaker, the bill is shouldered by Castries City Council. And so, Madam Speaker, there must be some kind of commensurate income stream to discharge those burdens without due difficulty. Madam Speaker, for the first time again, the Castries City Council conducted an annual awards exercise in 2007 to honor 21 workers who had performed credibly in the execution of the duties. In fact, Madam Speaker, on that night, one man literally cried. He said to me it was over 30-something years he had been working at the Castries City Council, and for the first time, someone saw it fitting to give him a plaque which he could hang on his wall and say, "Mr. Obama, I have worked well." So, Madam Speaker, all of those things have been done. 3 additional vehicles were purchased last year, Madam Speaker, during the currency of last year, to better serve, facilitate the duties and functions of the Castries City Council. A remarkable difference have been made. So, Madam Speaker, things are being done. You know, and when I read in an article in the Mirror newspaper, questioning the performance of this minister, I have to say, Madam Speaker, it is quite clear that that reporter is what we colloquially refer to as a gogo. Or that reporter, Madam Speaker, lacks the basic analytical skill of one of the most novice reporters. Absolutely no credibility. I have no idea. You see, Madam Speaker, it is sad questioning my performance, and I'm sure even the opposition would agree that this minister has performed. Even the opposition, you know. So whoever that reporter is, I think they suffered from a bout of schizophrenia at the time of reporting. You see, Madam Speaker, in St. Lucia, we thrive on row and bad talking each other, Madam Speaker. John Tillotson said, "A good word about another is quite an easy obligation, but not to speak ill about others only requires us to remain silent. And silence costs us nothing." So, Madam Speaker, the lesson to be learned from that, if we can't say something good about somebody, oh, just shut up. Madam Speaker, let me turn to the Ministry of Housing. Madam Speaker, the Ministry of Housing had teething problems when I took over as the minister. I became the minister, Madam Speaker, sometime in December, but up to the time of budget, when I addressed this Honorable House, my office comprised of no more persons than myself, my secretary, and my driver. That was the sum total of my ministry. But Madam Speaker, that never daunted me. I still proceeded to discharge the expectations, the legitimate expectations of those people who had voted for me as their representative. Madam Speaker, the National Housing and Policy Strategy. The sector over the years has been plagued by the absence of an overarching policy framework to guide and inform residential land use planning, housing development projects, and the public sector housing program to be implemented by the National Housing Corporation. The Ministry during the past year has accelerated the formulation of the National Housing Policy to the extent that the final draft has been completed after rigorous consultative processes whereby all relevant stakeholders had an input in the NHP's conception. The NHP is to be given effect by a strategy which will provide specific action-oriented details on how the planned policies are to be achieved through the short, medium, and long-term plan horizon. The National Housing Policy outlines a roadmap on the physical, social, and economic aspects of housing and provides policy prescriptions for sustainability in housing design and construction. Importantly, Madam Speaker, the issues of housing demand and supply is a key feature, and the NHP makes provision in the form of broad policy statements on the need for annual demand and supply projections to inform and influence the housing market. Madam Speaker, last year, again when I addressed the Honorable House, I indicated that notwithstanding the comfort station that I was deprived of, I had acquired some 24 acres of land in Marigold. I am pleased to inform this Honorable House and, of course, the member from Castries South, I have a bone to pick with you. I am pleased to inform this Honorable House, Madam Speaker, that the roads are at least 60% complete. The roads are about 60% complete, Madam Speaker. The houses would actually, the construction of the houses would actually commence, Madam Speaker, in the not too distant future. I envisage no more than about a month and a half, 6 weeks. Madam Speaker, through you, let me inform the member for Marigold, Castries South, that his fears can be allayed, Madam Speaker. He used, in my view, a wrong word in terms of the project implementation. He said that we are destroying whilst creating. Madam Speaker, I beg to differ significantly. I will destroy absolutely nothing, and you can be rest assured that any of your residents who will be displaced at the cost of the National Housing Corporation with all facilities. So let not your heart be troubled. If they are mindful about remaining in the area, they can, but they would have to bear the cost of the property. And Madam Speaker, let me just say that the property is being sold at a subsidized price. When you say subsidized price, one might readily believe that it is very, very cheap. But Madam Speaker, the cost of the land itself does not form part of the cost of the cost that the person pays for the land. What we are doing, Madam Speaker, we are prorating the infrastructure cost against lands available and then apportioning accordingly. So the land itself, there is no input for the cost of the land in the price that the land is being sold to those persons. And Marigold residents and everybody else are welcome, Madam Speaker. We will entertain each and every St. Lucia. So roads are being worked upon assiduously, Madam Speaker, and as I said, construction of the houses will commence very soon. Because of the 1,300 applications received for a mere 116 houses, a measure of urgency had to be deployed. In addition to the Marigold development, talks are currently underway, Madam Speaker, with the First Citizens Bank of Trinidad and Tobago for a loan of $85 million for the design and implementation of a project within the basin of Ancillary, not too far from the Marigold development. I am hoping, Madam Speaker, that this project would start within 6 months henceforth. Madam Speaker, in Swazelle, various designs of some 80 acres in Swazelle have already been prepared. And I must tell you, Madam Speaker, that we received tremendous, tremendous resistance from the Honorable Member from Babanu, being the Minister of Agriculture. He resisted the idea. I understood where the resistance was coming from, Madam Speaker, but right now what we have done to militate against futuristic clashes of such a nature, we have embarked upon a land policy review document, which would clearly delineate land for specific purposes, Madam Speaker, so we would not have reasons to cross paths with agricultural land vis-a-vis land earmarked for residential use. Because you see, Madam Speaker, land is a finite commodity. Unless we embark upon the exorbitant practice in Dubai, reclaiming the entire sea. I use the term Dubai inadvertently, Madam Speaker. Let me make that pronouncement. But Madam Speaker, I am saying land is a finite commodity, and unless we have the wherewithal to proceed on the exorbitant practice in Dubai, i.e. land acclimation, or refilling the sea, so to speak, we need building islands. We need to ensure that Dubai has a lot of money, you know. We need to ensure, Madam Speaker, that we have a firm land policy in place, and that is on the way. Madam Speaker, a number of investment companies have expressed interest, and the incentive, Madam Speaker, in dealing with those companies is that they will be coming to the table with their own finances. So, Madam Speaker, we will be developing this country not at the expense of taxpayers, but the financiers, the developers will bring in the funds, and as the houses are sold, they will recoup the expenditure. So there would be zero addition to our national debt. Madam Speaker, let me say something on PROUD very briefly. I know the Honourable Member for Viewport South is interested in PROUD. Madam Speaker, a decision had been taken in 2007, and it was mentioned in my budget presentation to hand over PROUD to the National Housing Corporation on the basis that the NHC, by virtue of its constitution, had the mandate to rationalize and regularize squatter settlements by providing infrastructure, upgrading, and security of tenure, etc., etc. It therefore constituted a duplicity of functions and a waste of resources to have two entities performing essentially the same task. The establishment of a unit to administer PROUD was premised on the perception that the National Housing Corporation lacked the capacity and did not have a track record of effectiveness and efficiency in successful implementation of projects. Therefore, since PROUD was conceived as a project that was result-oriented and required a quick turnover of services based on effective, efficient service delivery, a separate and distinct entity was created supposedly to be devoid of public sector red tape and bureaucracy.
However, you have 10 more minutes to finish to complete your presentation.
Madam Speaker.
The Minister for Education.
Madam Speaker, may I invoke Section 3210 from the Standing Orders to allow the member for Castries Central an additional half an hour to complete his delivery.
Honourable members, the question is that Standing Order 3210 be invoked to allow the Minister for Housing an additional half hour within which to complete his presentation. I now put the question. As many as are of that opinion, say aye. As many as are of the contrary opinion, say no. I think the ayes have it. The ayes have it. It is granted.
Madam Speaker, just to arrive at some kind of consensus, I started at 12:30, so which means my hour and a half will take me to 2 o'clock on the door.
Yes,
if I go that way.
Yes, it will.
Very. Madam Speaker, as I indicated, an audit which was carried out by a private sector engineering firm and later by a public sector department found that Proud was operating below expectation and was not satisfactorily fulfilling its purpose. Moreover, the program has begun to incur substantial cost overrun and was not accomplishing its mandate. The ministry, in conducting a clinical assessment of Proud, found out that the decision to transfer the program to the National Housing Corporation was not feasible wholesale due to the complexities and the intricacies of the activity and given the NHC's orientation, structure, and capacity constraints. A partial handover was more feasible and practical, with the ministry maintaining responsibility for monitoring, supervision, and general oversight, and the NHC for the various aspects of project formulation and implementation. Madam Speaker, the transfer of Proud is expected to be realized in the second quarter, July to September this year, subject to the allocation of the resource requirements. Let me pause here to state categorically that the objective of Proud, or the objective for which Proud existed, will continue ad infinitum. Regularization and giving the people the land at a cheap price and giving them the infrastructure, that will not stop, Madam Speaker. We need to continue to empower our people. I have no difficulties with that, Madam Speaker. So I needed to allay those fears, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, Madam Speaker, there is also the shelter development project, and there are several components of that shelter development project which was started by the last administration, one of it being the core unit construction. That component, Madam Speaker, seeks to finance the construction of 100 starter core units, estimated then at $59,000 each. I can tell you, Madam Speaker, given the increase in prices of building materials that are directly contingent to the increase of the price of fuel on the world market, those prices have to be thrown out of the window. A concrete shell, Madam Speaker, built on a concrete slab with internal walls, except for bathroom, will comprise each unit, and the need for future internal partitioning and expansion will be incorporated into the design. The implementing agency, NHC, will utilize a priority means test, which is to be developed to ensure that the provision of this service priority is given to the most needful households. I am pleased to inform this Honorable House, Madam Speaker, that the first 8 core units in Moshi will be completed within a month. Madam Speaker, Crestlands and Sufra. Crestlands has had its special problems, but we are expected to yield some 51 lots there, member for Sufra, and work is expected to be completed on May 31st, 2008. Let me take this opportunity, Madam Speaker, in this House, to give the Honourable Member from Sufra an undertaking that he will be invited to submit names for persons to access those lots, Madam Speaker. It will not be done to his exclusion. Madam Speaker, the Moshi development, there are a little over 100 lots, and at October 31st, 2007, we were about 47% complete. Now we should be about 75%, Madam Speaker. Completion is envisaged in the not-too-distant future. Madam Speaker, the performance targets. The ministry, Madam Speaker, we hope to achieve the following milestones during this year. An approved National Housing Policy Strategic Action Plan, a completed urban renewal situational analysis first draft of a national urban renewal policy and strategic plan of action, a project framework for the national housing and urban renewal information system, a housing urban renewal land bank database, that is very, very important, complete the construction of 40 new housing units in the Conway relocation project, phase 2A and 2B, complete the construction of 42 new housing units as part of the shelter development project, construct 50 new housing units in the Barron's Drive relocation project, provide 648 new service lots under Proud, approve application and processing procedures and guidelines for the processing and monitoring of fiscal incentives programs for housing development, a minimum housing assistance provision to 10 low-income households, regularization of a minimum of 10 project sites, resettlement of 32 households in the Conway relocation project, resettlement of 50 households in the Barron's Drive relocation project, complete the performance review of financial incentives provision, and complete the public sensitization program on the establishment of the National Certification Licensing Authority, something that was started by the last administration. The ongoing capital projects, Madam Speaker, for this year include the St. Jude's Highway Housing Project, the new Latuni Housing Development Project, the Escanot Land Rationalization and Relocation Project, the PI Ballambush Development, and the Barron's Drive Relocation Project. Allocations, Madam Speaker, have been made for all of those projects in this year's budget. Escanot is in Denry, Madam Speaker. Thank you very much, colleague. Madam Speaker, there is a new proposal for a capital project called the Housing Assistance Program. And Madam Speaker, it is predicated upon the need to help persons who are in dire straits, who are in need. And so, Madam Speaker, I have here the need for housing in St. Lucia is acute, especially among low-income groups. According to the poverty assessment report carried out in 2005-2006, 21.4% and 1.2% of the households in St. Lucia are classified as poor and indigent, respectively. Households within these groups have limited access to land or other forms of physical capital and are therefore unable to adequately satisfy their core housing needs, as their income prohibits them from accessing traditional housing finance. Consequently, this segment of the population will eventually require some level of assistance in order to improve their quality of life. Over the years, Madam Speaker, the Ministry has been inundated with requests for housing assistance by individuals from the very, very low to the low-income group. These results are as a direct result of their indigence and vulnerability to natural disasters and man-made disasters such as flooding, landslides, fires, as well as social malaise of their immediate surroundings. While the primary focus, Madam Speaker, is the policy formulation and project coordination designed to create an enabling environment for the development and delivery of adequate, affordable, safe, and environmentally sustainable housing, it is evident, Madam Speaker, that there is a need to develop and implement a program which seeks to provide the relief to households in dire need of housing assistance. The operating term here, Madam Speaker, is in dire need. A projected estimate of $1 million is proposed, Madam Speaker, in this year's estimate. Madam Speaker, I recently attended a conference in Martinique. It was a conference of United Nations Environment Protection in collaboration with the EU, Madam Speaker, and having addressed the gathering, a very, very powerful gathering, Madam Speaker, I indicated to them that there were some of my constituents that were in dire need, Madam Speaker, of some assistance. And so I indicated, Madam Speaker, that essentially I needed houses for my people. I received a commitment in principle, Madam Speaker, for some €10 million to assist me in relocating some persons who I intend to donate those houses to, Madam Speaker. So I am trying my utmost, Madam Speaker, to bring relief to those people who really deserve the relief. It is not for Masha, Honorable Member for Masha, stop staring at me. Madam Speaker, as it relates to local government, the ministry has been on a roll, Madam Speaker. Indeed, it has been on a roll. There have been encouraging signs and positive responses to restore interest and eliminate apathy. A number of initiatives were undertaken during the period 2007 to March 2008, as evidenced by the following performance results. Conduct of 24 meetings island-wide with local councils, the holding of 3 training seminars on the aspects of the legislative framework, functional roles and responsibilities, and financial planning and management with 60 trained persons. Last year, Madam Speaker, I intimated that I did not like the way the local town and village councils operated because they had absolutely no monies at their disposal. Last year, Madam Speaker, I made the pronouncement that in this Honorable House that every year a sum of $100,000 would be given to each and every town and village council in 4 quarterly allocations to help themselves. Because sometimes a town or village council might just be confronted with some kind of exigency, and because they cannot get hold of a government minister to commit himself or herself, then those situations go without being taken care of. I am pleased to inform members that each and every town and village council have received that allocation and will continue receiving that allocation for the balance of the time that I remain Minister of Local Government. Mr. Speaker, I also bring good news to the town and village councils. Allocations have been made to supply each and every town and village council with a new vehicle during this current budgetary period. So things are indeed happening. I know, yes, member from Sufre, indeed. You will learn of it. I might hand over the keys to you, member from Sufre, so you have no problem. Madam, Mr. Speaker, we have also renovated 10 public facilities and a project proposal on local government reform process with recommendations have been approved by Cabinet. This financial year, we are hoping to prepare new and updated Local Authorities Act to replace the 1946 ordinance and establish regulations to give effect to the new act. I believe that even in if we are permitting democracy to prevail within the four corners of our jurisdiction, I believe that democracy should also lend itself to the election of local councillors as opposed to selection, even if I have that authority. And so I look forward to the day, Mr. Speaker, when local councillors will be elected and not selected. Madam, Mr. Speaker, we have already established, at least on paper, local government authorities in Babano and Denry North. We have extended the local authority boundaries in Viewfort, Swizzle and Miku to redefine those and to bring them and align them with constituency boundaries. You see, the difficulty is, Mr. Speaker, you have a situation where you have 17 constituencies, election constituencies, yet you have only 10 town and village councils. Invariably, some people are left out of representation by a local government. And in my humble view, this is unfair. And in my view, this is unfair, so we are trying, we are taking a dual approach to regularizing the problem. One is the creation of new councils, and secondly, where those councils are not created, to realign those boundaries to fall in conformity with the constituency election boundaries. Let me turn quickly to the Ministry of Planning. I will deal with the physical planning section. The physical planning section of the Ministry of Physical Development is an important agency of government. It is the agency responsible for spearheading physical development from a policy and regulatory standpoint. This PPS is the Secretariat of the Development Control Authority, which is responsible for the facilitation of orderly physical development around the island. In recent years, especially since the lead-up to Cricket World Cup in 2007, there has been a dramatic increase in the workload of the section as it relates to the following. One, the number of applications received and processed for development purposes. Two, the number of large development applications received and processed for permissions. The number of illegal developments being discovered and brought into compliance, and the monitoring of development projects to ensure compliance with conditions of approval. This increased workload has brought to focus many areas within the sphere of the physical development agenda that require adjustments. The section aims to approach these challenges by reviewing and revising the framework upon which the mandate is founded. In that regard, some of the activities planned to be undertaken this year by the section and DCA include the following. One, a consultancy to review the Physical Planning and Development Act. Two, I explained earlier, a national land use plan based on the National Physical Development Strategy. Three, already activities are ongoing to strengthen the capacity of the DCA and the physical planning section to meet its challenges. Lastly, legislation has already been amended, Mr. Speaker, soon to be passed in this Honorable House. The legislation is, as it currently stands, when one applies for permission to build a single family house, that plan has to be sent, the health plan has to be sent to the Ministry of Health for approval before it can even be looked at by DCA. Mr. Speaker, we felt that if an engineer has the wherewithal to determine the structural integrity of a house, I believe he can be equipped with the relevant knowledge to determine the suitability or functionality of a septic tank. And so that it would be a one-stop shop in that instance. No longer will plans have to be taken to the Ministry of Health for approval, where sometimes they say for a very lengthy period before they are then sent to DCA for ultimate approval. So once that legislation is passed, we will find reprieve in that situation. Mr. Speaker, the architectural section of the ministry has completed works in a number of areas, including the new administrative building, the transit home, the civil status registry, the Fijian Island Bridge Facility. That project request was made by the NCA. The project involves the enhancement of the open public beach area between the existing National Park and Sanders Grand Hotel. It includes the provision of vendors' huts to accommodate two vending stations each, two rangers' huts for security for security and management purposes, one lifeguard station, a defined play area, properly organized recreational spaces, seating, lighting, and a public washroom. The project has been estimated at approximately $1.5 million. The architectural section has presented the project on several occasions to a number of stakeholders, including representatives from the National Trust, Sanders Grand, Ministry of Economic Affairs, the Vendors Association, and the NCA office. Architectural drawings are 80% complete, and funding for that project is still being sought by the NCA office. We have gone through a number of things. Satellite warehouse, the Peter Management Inscription Site, NEMO Operations Center in Bizet, the Human Resource Development Centers, and a number of other bits and pieces that have been done by the architectural section of the ministry. I come now to a very interesting area, which is the veto management area. Mr. Speaker, I for one have had difficulty with the draconian conditions enunciated by UNESCO in us retaining the World Heritage status conferred upon us a couple of years ago. Whilst I understand that essentially it brings tourism to our countries, we have to balance, Mr. Speaker, the right of an individual, his constitutional right to use his property as he pleases vis-a-vis the retention of that World Heritage status. And so a meeting will be held with UNESCO representatives in England later this year. We are hoping first week in June, hopefully, a meeting will be held with UNESCO representatives, ministers of this government, myself, the minister with responsibility for UNESCO, the Honorable Aston James, and the Minister for Social Transformation. We are hoping that on completion of that meeting, a balance would have been struck in terms of what we are permitted to do without endangering the World Heritage status that we currently enjoy. As far as the land registry is concerned, Mr. Speaker, it is the repository of all land and other related records in St. Lucia. As communities grow and land ownership changes and development occurs at a rapidly increasing rate, that growth, it is reflected in the increasing number of land transactions and other related documents in the documents registered at the land registry. During the year 2007, 1,356 additional parcels were created as a result of land subdivisions, condominium, and multi-unit development, and approximately 7,400 land transactions were registered. The Office of the Land Registry is faced with a demand increase in human and financial resources while needing to provide a high level of service to the public citizens and private firms alike. The department is also faced, Mr. Speaker, with space constraints in the vault where all documents are stored due to the increasing number of documents filed on a daily basis. Approximately 40 land transactions are submitted for registration daily. The best way, Mr. Speaker, to keep up with the workload and to incorporate the best available technology is through computerization. Currently, negotiations are ongoing between the government of St. Lucia, the French government, and the European Union in an effort to establish a GIS within the different government ministries, which will electronically capture critical data and allow for the sharing of information between the different ministries and departments and other agencies. The new GIS, and the meaning of GIS, is Geographic Information System. It will result in the digitization of some of the land registry records, and a complete computerization will provide easily retrievable, efficient, and effective land title information to the general public, including other ministries and departments, foreign investors, and public utilities. So things are indeed happening, and things are earmarked to happen. Solid waste, quickly. Over the past year, the waste collection costs have been reduced from $5.5 million in 2004-2005 to $4.7 in 2006-2007. This reduction in cost was due to the introduction of increased operational efficiency by the realignment of certain waste collection zones, as well as an effective tender process. Likewise, in the area of waste disposal, costs have been reduced from $2.4 million in 2003-2004 to $1.39 million in 2006-2007. Again, this has been achieved through the introduction of increased operational efficiencies. The authority has obtained European Union funding for projects in Leclerc and the communities of Market Road, Coimbula, Spalmis, and Soufre, in Soufre. The projects are aimed at improving the infrastructure of waste management in those areas. Mr. Speaker, I want to take the last 15 minutes allotted to me to make certain recommendations to this Honorable House, and recommendations which I believe all and sundry need to be interested in and take cognizance of. I will not speak on crime, Mr. Speaker, because I have listened to a multitude of persons, bystanders I refer to them, take credit for the reduction in crime. I actually put my life on the line, Mr. Speaker, stood in the midst of a barrage of weapons, but everybody, save Richard Frederick, takes credit for the decrease in crime. We must learn to give credit where credit is due. Mr. Speaker, three recommendations quickly. We are currently undergoing a constitutional review. One of the things, Mr. Speaker, I am hoping that is addressed is the question of senators, Mr. Speaker, in that constitutional review. The reason I'm saying so, Mr. Speaker, is because you have situations where there is disgruntlement, and let me say categorically that my contribution or recommendation in this instance is not geared at any senator, either opposite or in government, but I believe it is something that is worthy of discussion. You see, Mr. Speaker, when a political party presents a slate of candidates for elections, the public legitimately expects that any of those candidates can be given ministerial responsibilities. That is a legitimate expectation. But, Mr. Speaker, there are times if the electorate knows of the existence of an intention of bringing a certain slate of candidates or certain slate of senators, they may not necessarily agree with your slate. And so, there is an old saying, Mr. Speaker, by Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln said, "No one is good enough to govern another without the other's consent." So that when you put yourself up for elections, the people have consented to you representing them. I believe, Mr. Speaker, that I want to see the day when prior to elections, at least 60 days before elections, all political parties present a slate of 10 or 12 persons from whom the senators will be chosen, so as to give the public an indication and some kind of insight as to who will be representing them. This is very important, and like I say, this is not meant for any particular person. I believe that we are making a mockery of the people's confidence in us by us doing what they never expected us to do. If they know, for all you know, they may vote differently. In Trinidad, we had the case, Madam Speaker, we had the case where about 9 persons lost the elections, and those persons were slated to become senators, and the president said, "Not me." The people reject them, I'm not swearing them in. So essentially, we cannot make a mockery of the desires of our people. All I need to see, and I'm saying it is neither for opposition senators or government senators, election time, this is my sleep. Those are my possible senators. Let the people decide. Let the people decide. This is very, very important. Because when the people have legitimate expectations which are thrown out of the window, Madam Speaker, we make a mockery of democracy. Madam Speaker, I am sure if that is done, all the grievance and disgruntlement in relation to senators will be obliterated, because persons would have known well in advance who to expect or who not to expect. This, I think, is important, and it should be tied in with the constitutional review. Because you can have a situation, Madam Speaker, let us say this party wins the elections with 12 candidates. The Prime Minister says, look, I'm holding two, and I'll take 10 senators who were looking in the dark, who were nowhere around. You understand? I believe, like I said, I'm not individualizing this, members, please. I am not. But this is very, very important. It is important for the people. We are representing the people. And the people, like I said, have certain legitimate expectations when you present a slate of candidates. Madam Speaker, the second point I want to make quickly, I only have 10 more minutes. Diplomatic passports. Madam Speaker, it cannot be right, and I don't care about Labour or UWP, it cannot be right that a PS, and I have no difficulty with the PS having a diplomatic passport, let me make this clear. I have no difficulty. A PS has a diplomatic passport. A senator has a diplomatic passport, but a man who the people entrusted, who the people voted for, is not given a diplomatic passport because he's not a minister? No, no. We have to change those things, Madam Speaker. We have to change those things, because what we are doing is we are making a mockery of the desires of the people. It's a new beginning. Yes. Let us start afresh. And Madam Speaker, I believe that if a permanent secretary, I'm saying I have no difficulties with that, because a permanent secretary manages the ministry. But for God's sake, a man who fought, who went out there, and who received the embrace of his people, a diplomatic passport is discretionary to him. And as it is, Madam Speaker, as it is, there are persons on the government side that are not entitled based on the criteria that is pronounced. You know, I find, Madam Speaker, this is regressive. And I will agree, once a man has won the election, let him have a diplomatic passport, Madam Speaker, because he's an ambassador of the people who voted for him. That has to be regularized. Madam Speaker, the last thing I want to see. You know, that, and you know, there are persons who are intimidated by a certain territory, but certainly I'm not, Madam Speaker. I said, certainly I'm not. The issue of duty-free vehicles. Madam Speaker, let me just say this. We are returning nationals. Now again, let me say clearly, I have absolutely no difficulty with giving a returning national a duty-free vehicle. I have no difficulty with that. You give them. A foreigner comes here under the guise of being an investor. We give him 40 vehicles. Income tax break for 20 years. Property tax relief. Vendor tax relief. And you're telling me the representatives here who are supposed to be representing the people, who are supposed to hint to the call of the people, cannot get a duty-free vehicle? Madam Speaker, permanent secretaries, in my view, they are the managers of the ministries. Why can't we give a permanent secretary and other high technical oriented staff a duty-free vehicle? We give to all and sundry. We give hundreds of millions to persons on whom we have not even done due diligence. You know, and this is, Madam Speaker, can I just ask from you whether you would entertain a totally unprompted motion? Because I am prepared to move this motion at the conclusion of the debate that all members of parliament, whether yellow, green, blue, once you are a member of parliament or permanent secretary in a ministry, you ought to be entitled to a duty-free vehicle, changeable every 3 years. We give returning nationals every 5. We give returning nationals. I'm not saying let's take it from them. We give anybody 40 jeeps, 10 double cabs, all kind of things. And we, who have to respond to the needs of the people, are in all nooks and crannies. You know, this is unbelievable, Madam Speaker. And so, Madam Speaker, I am hoping that at the conclusion of this budget debate, you will entertain a totally unprompted motion, which I intend to move in this honorable house. We have to let our parliamentary reps operate within a comfort zone to do what they have to do for the people. And so, Madam Speaker, I will want to move that motion on completion of the budget debate, if I am so permitted. I thank you very much, Madam Speaker.